from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Well, I still consider myself, this is the first podcast since my birthday, and I just wanted to give a shout out to everybody in the atheist community on Facebook and on Twitter who were nice enough to wish me happy birthday. That was pretty cool. It was very nice.
Yeah, and also he'd like to thank all of you ladies for sending him naked pictures. He'd like to thank you for that.
Yeah, no naked pictures yet, but some cool hot atheist chicks. Yes.
Well, you know, the hope. The hope is there.
This is the way
Your motivation's there.
Let me just put it out there like this. If you consider yourself a hot atheist chick and you really believe this, then perhaps you should consider sending a friend request to me just to say, I am a hot atheist chick, and just that is your statement.
Don't listen to them. That's how he gets you.
Well, it's my birthday, too, so hey.
You got to do it now. You're absolutely forced. Okay, we're going to have a good show today. Now, one of the things that I want to mention first is that we probably have a significantly larger listening audience for this bonus podcast, and let me tell you why. Because I've started to do a little bit of research. Well, by a little bit, and I mean, have I been really reading and talking about the ideas that I've been researching so far?
Absolutely nonstop to distraction. Even when I go to the bathroom, you will not stop.
Okay, so I'm getting a little bit obsessive. The thing that I've been really thinking about a lot recently it has to do with freemium. Now, as you guys are aware, since you're bonus podcast listeners, we benefit directly from this freemium service. You are our patrons. We offer premium service, but most of our content that we provide is free. That's why it's called freemium. Ooh, it's clever. Anyways, I'm giving a presentation on that very matter either Saturday or Sunday. Apparently, the organizers can't seem to quite know yet when everybody's going. That's another matter altogether, but anyways.
Always the difficulties this artist must put
I
up with.
I just like knowing, man, because if it's on the Sunday, it works out perfect for me because I would rather that extra day. Mm-hmm. I want to know if I got that extra day because the extra day is like one of those I could go into this bold new direction, but I need one more day angle.
I tell you what, I'm really hoping that you do become this big speaker guy because I think your speaking career will mirror my DJing career with your irritation at getting booked for gigs that screw you over and
So you want me to experience your disappointment?
No, I'm not talking about it. It's the highs and lows, the craziness of it, the absurdity of it. The wild rides and hand jobs in the bathrooms.
I don't know if these are the same kind of conferences.
No, I'm joking. There was no... Honestly,
it was never in the bathroom, you fools. Okay, so basically, one of the things that I was really thinking about recently was I was trying to figure out, well, why is it that some people... what is the big deal about freemium? I mean, we were doing it in a very organic... kind of way, just winging it so far. But, you know, the research needed to be done. I thought it was a great opportunity to just kind of grok the ideas. And one of the things that I thought about was just how we might be able to find other ways to get people to contribute. And it's to say that maybe not all transactions have to be monetary. Maybe there are other kind of venues, other third-party ways to get people to pay, because each radio show that we do basically ends up about 40 cents under our micropayment structure. And that's not much, you know. And trying to find a way for people to be able to make that money for you rather than necessarily pay you is one of those things that I've been thinking about.
Yeah, because all of the crazy ways that you can pay through the internet, it's like none of them are very practical.
No, it's not practical. So basically I've been trying to think of some new ideas. The survey thing is one of those nice tests because we can entice people with this podcast that I'm essentially just recording right now and say, are you guys interested in working for us? It's like tiny micro labor. And as time goes by, I'm going to try to find more unique and more effective ways to see if I can implement this. And one of the interesting things that I've learned so far, even before the surveys have begun, I started asking a few questions around. And one of the really interesting things is that a lot of you already paying members want to contribute more, but you don't necessarily have the money to do it. And that's a really fascinating kind of tidbit of information right here that I didn't know. I didn't know that people would like to give more, but just can't. And that's one of those things that I want to try to fix, you know? It obviously makes sense. There's got to be ways to do it. And, you know, you got to think next gen when it comes to that stuff. The new media is not really that laid out, you know? We are still kind of formulating a plan. So you guys are part of that. So all of you new survey people that have sort of agreed to it, welcome to the bonus show. How does it feel now?
Well, to be exploring the great unknown.
The great unknown. The great experiment. And hopefully it'll just grow from that. Okay, with that said, so now we've included the little storyline here. Made you feel special.
I want to make fun of God.
Let's make fun of God
and people who believe in God.
Let's do it. Okay, here's something I want to talk about first. We're going to talk about suicide bombing and bombers probably for the entirety of the show because it's something that has been on my mind for a little while, and I went back and I started trying to read the history of suicide attacks. And actually, I don't want to go too deep into it because this is not a history lesson. But it is interesting that the first real recorded suicide attack was in Russia, actually, with Tsar Alexander II, who was murdered by suicide bombers. Of course, this is a very crude bomb. So if one guy went off, he got injured. Then the Tsar comes out of his carriage, sedan, find out what's going on. Second bomber tries to kill him. Third bomber finally does it. So I guess they wanted him dead.
Is it just me, or do the Russians seem really bad at assassinating? Didn't it take like 10 guys to bring down Rasputin? He like just wouldn't go down.
I know, he wouldn't go down. They tried poisoning him, he didn't die. They tried stabbing him, they tried choking him, they tried all kinds of things. He just would not die. You know what he died of? You know what Rasputin died of? He died of pneumonia.
Yeah.
He died of pneumonia after being shot, strangled, poisoned, and dumped in a freezing lake. It was the pneumonia that finally got him. So maybe they are kind of terrible at killing, or sometimes they just go too far. It was like the last czars, the way that they were killed. They were like shot dead. They were grenaded. They were just obliterated from existence.
That country is very live by the sword, die by the sword. That's kind of the vibe that I get from it.
It's a little bit crazy. All right, let's talk about suicide bombing. There was an article that I found in the Daily Star. I don't actually know where Daily Star comes from. Who gives a shit? It's the internet. Anyways, I read an article that was basically saying that a survey had found that the main cause of suicide bombings was not religion. So their list included politics, humiliation, revenge, retaliation, and altruism as the main five factors behind suicide bombing. And I wanted to just sit down and we're going to have a little conversation, and I'm going to kind of go through the entire list and demonstrate why there is a religious basis for all of these things, because I think it's kind of dumb to just say, well, religion's not involved at all because there's all these other factors. But at the end of the day, I mean, are you going to ignore the elephant in the room? Why do these factors exist in the first place? If religion wasn't there, would those same factors exist? I think that's the important question. That's the main relevant question. If you remove religion, do these same factors fucking exist?
I'm excited. Let's do this.
All right, let's do this. Let's start first by the suggestion that a suicide bombing is only political and not religious in nature. So that's the first thing I want to deal with. Now, let's hear your thought. Do you think that it is sort of religious or political? Do these things, can you separate these two things is what I'm asking you?
I imagine not in the Middle East, no. I mean, even here we're having a hard time doing it, so I can't imagine how it would be over there.
Well, that's exactly the point, because Islam and Islam is a political religion in many sense. It didn't start off as being a political religion, but unlike all the, you know, unlike Christianity, whose main savior just fucking disappears and it's other people talking about what he said or did, Muhammad was around, okay? So, and he wasn't just sort of some prophet. He was also a military commander. And whenever they would establish the kingdom of Islam, essentially, there were, you know, specific rules, and they were rooted in the Quran. And the Sharia law, based on sort of like interpretations of the Quran and of the Hadith, this is the Sharia law. This is the law of the land. That's what it means. And to suddenly think, well, this is not politics, this is religion. I'm like, what do you? Their system of law is engineered around religion. What do you think that makes Islam? It's a fucking political religion. You know, the caliphate, the thing that the Sunnis want to bring back up. That is a theology, man. That is just the priest class ruling over everyone. It's a very sort of scary prospect, trust me, when you actually think about the what would this world be like if it was a gigantic caliphate? Do you want to live in that world? You want to live in a caliphate with Sharia law.
I think that's pretty much why everybody has such that knee-jerk reaction to the idea of Islam spreading around the world. Because I think everybody does, like, atheist people and other religious people, they're all terrified of it. And it's kind of a knee-jerk reaction, but it is pretty scary.
Look, I know for sure there are lots of people that are Muslim and do believe that there should be a separation of church and state. That's a very modern attitude, but as a political religion, Islam reflects, you know, the 7th century kind of mentality that created it. And I'm sure at the time, at the 7th century, it was the fucking latest shit, man. It was the latest stuff.
It kept everything just working because that's how hardcore you had to be to just make it roll.
Well, it's why they were also, you know, they were technologically and theologically advanced. I mean, in a sense, they were way ahead of their time. They recognized the political power of their religion faster than anybody else had. And I think that they learned, quite a bit from the Byzantine or Empire, or at least the Roman Empire that had collapsed. And still, you know, you're going to learn from their mistakes and learn from their successes. And I think that kind of explains also what that kind of political motivation, you know, the understanding of saying we need to make sure that we have control over this bitch. Of course, the funny thing is, the hilarious thing is, as soon as Muhammad died, there was huge debate over whether or not, who would take the reins. You know, you got all of a sudden one gigantic branch that said, well, it should be a relative of Muhammad. And all of a sudden, boom, you know, you got the Shiite group. They just split off, man, and they're never going to come back together. That is it. You know, it's like split. Boom, you know, it would almost like be debating whether or not Jesus existed. It's just that serious, man. Because they also believe, I believe it's the Shiite who believe that the 13th Imam will come down from heaven and reinstate sort of a kingdom of peace, kind of like a Jesus-like messianic myth. They have their own.
Yeah.
It's like the 13th Imam. That's another.
Does it have anything to do with that 13 Warrior movie with Antonio Banderas?
No, it has absolutely nothing.
I was going out on a limb and hoping for some kind of delightful connection, but alas.
Maybe they tried to make one in the movie, but no. It was a cool movie for what it was. I appreciated it.
It was like a gigantic bomb, eh?
It was like
disaster it's like cost like $80 million to make. Brought in something like $30 million.
Nah, you know, all movies end up making their money in the end. They're even Waterworld.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Made money.
Yep.
So, I mean, until now, until the age of piracy, you could make money with a bomb. Let me tell you something. I think I know why Hollywood's afraid of, you know, the free market. It's just because they got so many bombs. Nobody would give money for it.
Yep.
So what are you supposed to do with Waterworld if it's 2009? I don't know.
It's like,
make a theme park out of it or something.
I'd ride the Waterworld ride.
Yep. Okay. That was the first one. We dealt with politics. Okay, let's deal with the second one, which was humiliation.
Mm-hmm.
And I basically want to talk about the Crusades first. Remember how we were watching that documentary from that weird guy who looked like Gary Busey, except for British?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, they were talking on that documentary. I don't remember the name of it. It was quite good, so I'll try to find it. But we were watching the documentary, the history of the Crusades. And one of the things that I had never really thought about is, how does the Middle East regard the Crusades? You know, you use that word here, and we're on a crusade for good. We're on this, blah, blah, blah. We don't think about it. It's like using the word Holocaust over there, you know, and using it with pride. Would you like people using that word with pride? I don't think so. But apparently that's how they feel. So if you really want to kind of understand where some of the humiliation that they might feel comes from, imagine the fact that there was a campaign. Like, let's imagine the inverse, right, where the Muslim had a campaign to basically eradicate just a bunch of Christians, and they had called it, say, I don't know, a jihad. How would you feel about the word jihad? You may not feel that good about it. Well, they feel the same fucking way about crusades. So, number one, if you want to avoid this whole humiliation shit they've been talking about, I suggest just get rid of that word. It's a bad word. You want them to get rid of jihad? I say we fucking get rid of crusade as a positive word. We identified the crusades as a mistake, as a serious fucking mistake. We say that right now.
Mm-hmm.
But like I'm saying, this plays in part of that humiliation. They feel as though Islam and the Arab world has been humiliated by the West. And this is, I believe, that factor.
Well, I can definitely see how it could be like a huge historical factor in just the consciousness of a people. But even just on a more direct level, the way I would imagine humiliation would come from, because this is, I tried to kind of imagine myself in that position. I'm like, everybody in the West thinks we're barbarians. They think we're pieces of shit, that we live in
piles
the desert.
Of
and basically, the West looks down on the Middle East, and they know it, and they hate it, and they are angry at it. And that's basically the way I kind of imagined it, just how that would work.
Well,
why you would have this hatred of them? Because they think we're shit. Fuck them. Fuck them up their asses.
Okay, well, here's another factor, too, to humiliation. This is a bit on a smaller scale, but it's still religious in nature. Some of the suicide bombers, this is not all of them, but this is a tactic that I read about on a number of websites. I believe it was actually reported on BBC News as well, is the fact that there is a campaign to recruit women to be suicide bombers, and the way they do that is they basically rape them. And then they convince them that the only way to get rid of that dishonor is to basically strap themselves with a bomb and take a bunch of people out. As far as I know, there's only maybe 80 cases of this confirmed, although it apparently it's very common because, you know, remember the whole honor killing thing? Well, you know, lots of women also believe in that shit. And when they get raped, they think it's their fault.
Man,
so they figure the only way to fucking get, you know, any kind of honor back is by martyrdom. And guess what religion has that prepackaged martyrdom fucking the special? The fucking Islam special. Well, you get a bunch of virgins. You get to bring a whole bunch of your family members with you. And you're a hero.
I do love how Islam does have those gift pack things where it's like, you get this and this. It's very Price is Right. I dig it.
Well, that's the fifth one, actually. I'm going to jump around a little. Altruism. This is, you want to talk altruism, talk about the fact that, say, Saddam Hussein used to offer family members a certain discount, but like a certain dowry if family members had, you know, killed themselves in suicide attacks. And there are, you know, many other instances of Saudi imams and all that Saudi fucking money basically paying people to do it. And it happens all the time in Palestine, too. And people that are just desperate want to provide for their family. I mean, they have altruism. Not a problem here. Unfortunately, there is a mechanism to exploit that altruism, and it feels good, too. You're like, wow, my family is not only provided for here on Earth, but also in heaven because they're guaranteed a place there. Look, again, this has a religious basis. Why would anyone feel that it's altruistic to blow themselves up unless they figured that there is some kind of reward in the afterlife? Like, there is something that they are striving to even when they're gone. I mean, think about, is it not weird that you plan your own funeral? You're not going to fucking be there. There should be no reason to plan for it unless you think you will be there, just in a different way. And I mean, it's the same fucking shit right here. People think that they're going to still be around.
I don't know. If I don't plan it, they might play Bon Jovi at it, and that wouldn't be cool.
You're not going to be around. You're not going to care. Okay, it wouldn't be cool. Somebody's gonna come back in time and tell you that happened.
Look, here's the thing: if I die, they'll end up playing the wrong Bon Jovi song at my funeral.
It doesn't matter,
and that's no good.
You're fucking dead, man.
It's got to be Blaze of Glory.
No one will care. No one will care. I'm not saying no one will care that you're dead. No one will care what specific fucking song you wanted to play because you're not around to hear it. Maybe you should play what they want. They're the alive ones. You're fucking dead. Fuck you, man. You have to go ahead and die.
But
have you
ever thought about other people's feelings in this? You're the kind of person, you go home and you'll be like, I'm going to take all my movies with me and not leave you any because, hey, I'm not here to experience it, and fuck you.
No, that's different. That's different. That is very different.
Well, we're talking about funerals, and you're just trying to browbeat my Bon Jovi idea, and I'm just like,
you're trying to
off,
defend
man.
Bon Jovi, man.
Get your own sandwich.
The point that I was trying to make, okay. Let's go back to the point.
Yes.
Is essentially, generally, we'll say, unless you're around to experience something, it really doesn't matter. But there is kind of a plan that formulates in these people's mind. I will kill myself, and because I have had assurances that there is both the afterlife and reward in the afterlife for doing this, I'm going to fucking do it. Look,
I'm not going to deny that religion is a definite lure on it, for sure.
It's not the lure. It's the whole deal. All right. It's the bait. It's the thing you're catching. It is everything. It's an all encompassing. It's everywhere.
It's like, you go do that, and then we'll meet up in the afterlife.
Look. Here's another thing. If you kill yourself in a suicide attack and say you will get money from it, because although it's not all suicide bombers that get money, many do. Do you think you're going to go to a bank You know, it's not even going to involve a bank. It's going to involve another religious institution. What, they're not involved? Oh, no. They're the ones that are fucking transferring all the money, paying for all that shit. Oh, no, no. It's not religion doing that. Let me imagine here. Is it possible that it's religion? I mean, imagine it was the Catholic institution doing this instead. You know, telling people to fucking kill themselves. And the money was coming from the Catholic Church. When everyone would say, religion's not involved here. Is religion involved in preventing AIDS or condom distribution in Africa? Yes. Yes, directly. Die fucking reckly. Okay, let's go on to some of the other ones. I want to talk about revenge. Okay? Because this one has the most stretch. Because I will admit for the most part that not all revenge desires are religious in nature. They're not. I mean, I'll be the first to fucking admit that. But I want to talk the context of the situation. Imagine that you live in Palestine. Okay, you've had your family members killed in some kind of retaliation attack, and you want justice. You want fucking you want to punish someone. Okay, that's normal. Revenge and retaliation, these are normal fucking emotions that we have. I think we all have. There's, if someone killed your family members, you would have the impulse to kill them. It's just, I think that's a natural impulse. I don't think it should be encouraged. But at the same time, I don't want to wash over the fact that the entire reason why that conflict exists rests on this ridiculous notion that Jews had, that the Bible promised them this land, that somehow it was theirs, that the Bible said it and that was good enough for them, and they just walk in and just fucking take the shit. It's the Bible, man. It's the fucking Bible that they try to justify that. And all the trouble, all the mess, yeah, it does go back to that. Zionism is a religious movement, okay? It's not a political one. It's not like this was the best fucking piece of land to take, okay? It's a desert. It's a fucking shitty desert. But, you know, it's what their religion said. So, hey, let's create the state of Israel.
It's that or bust. That or bust.
It's that or bust. Okay, that essentially covers, I would say, most of it, since revenge and retaliation are kind of the same. And I wanted to deal with, you know, politics, and we dealt with altruism. Here's another thing that I sort of like want to bring forward, and this will be a completely different religion to demonstrate. It's kind of the same thing in Japan during the Second World War. This is going to be your little history lesson. This is fun.
Ooh.
We're going to talk about suicide bombers, or as they called them back then, kamikaze, which in Japanese means divine wind.
The ones that scream banzai.
Well, no, see, there's a difference between the banzai and the kamikazes, actually. You see, because when you're a kamikaze, it's understood that you will die, for sure. But when you banzai someone, you might survive, because you're rushing them in a sense.
Because the emperor could lift you up with his wings or whatever.
Well,
because banzai has something about for the emperor to, like, emperor prevail me.
Yeah, so. I think banzai means 1,000 years, which is basically cool. Sort of how long the emperor should live for. But like I said, not every guy who yelled banzai would also die. So there's a difference, actually, between a suicide bomber, a suicide attack, and a suicidal attack. The suicidal one is just where that's not wise, but you might still survive. A suicide one is death is assured. And here's the crazy thing about the whole kamikaze thing.
Death means success.
Yes, death is ultimately what you're aiming for. Now, at the time where they proposed this, when the Japanese were really proposing this, it was kind of built out of a bit of desperation, because the Japanese knew that they were being outproduced by Americans, and they had a huge problem is they don't have any natural oil. And that's a big issue. That's one of the reasons why the Japanese decided that they were going to invade all these parts of Asia, because they were oil rich and they needed oil. You know, you can't do war without oil, without that goo. And the technology didn't exist to be able to turn coal into gas, because you can do that, but it's really fucking messy and you get about half of the shit. So it's really, really wasteful. It's kind of like the stuff that the Germans were doing when they were, like, completely and utterly surrounded. They were using coal and converting that into fuel, so it cost them quite a bit. But the crazy thing was, when they asked for applicants, they had to turn people away, all right? I think there was a total, the total amount of people that volunteered and died or the volunteers that did die was almost 4,000 Japanese pilots. Now, most of these were terrible pilots. Like, you didn't have much of a training. And a lot of them were just basically shot down because it was, I think the failure rate was extremely high. You know, they were terrible pilots, strapped full of bombs, stuff like that. So you're highly explosive. You get a couple shots, you're just going to blow up. And generally, their effectiveness was not too good. It was not good at all. I mean, we might think, like, the attacks at Pearl Harbor were not kamikazes, right? Those were
They weren't desperate enough at that point to call in the kamikazes.
No, they weren't desperate at that point at all. But one of the reasons why it was so appealing to people has to do with the fact that, look, Shintoism, which is basically kind of like a, I don't know how to describe it, an ancestor kind of religion in Japan. It's not the perfect way to describe it, but Shinto is very, very unique. I recommend you go read upon it. I don't want to give everybody like a 30-minute lecture on what Shintoism is. Go find out. It's called the Internet. You'll love it. But essentially, they have this idea that the emperor is sort of like a god. And that...
Wait, don't we pay you for this? Shouldn't we be talking about Shinto? We'll do it another episode, but...
We'll do it another episode.
I was like, wait a second.
We'll do it at some point. I just don't want to do it now. We're talking about suicide attacks here.
It
can't
go
on tangents.
Yeah.
But the whole thing is, imagine this. They consider the emperor to be a god. And the proposal that they made is that kamikaze pilots would be buried in a special burial ground that would be visited by the emperor every year. So in essence, you had a god who would acknowledge and pray for you because you had done this. So to a lot of people, this was like, this was it. You weren't going to do better than fucking dying for your emperor. And that is a religious attitude, you know? It may not seem like a religion to us because it's not the same kind of...
Because it doesn't have a sky god with a beard and a son who's just, I guess, nice.
But look, it's still some dogmatic shit that doesn't make any sense, okay? If it smells like a religion, it probably is one, okay? It's not based on facts. It's not based on any facts here. Anyways, the point that I was trying to make is that the kamikaze, the phenomenon of the kamikaze is a religious phenomenon, okay? You can identify many of the motivations behind it as being religious. There were pragmatic reasons, too, because, you know, you'd hope that your family would be taken care of. There was no guarantee of that, but I guess they figured... Probably or hopefully. I mean, I guess they thought also, you know, victory is assured. Japan's future is secured. As long as I take this plane and smash it into a battleship.
You know how some people are, right?
Now, okay, so the one thing that I, the reason why I brought this up. Now, there are other examples, too, of actually Hindu suicide bombers, but they're very low. I haven't heard many, maybe 20 of them, but there are still in many different religions suicide attacks attackers that are motivated, at least if not entirely, at least a majority of it is still a religious fervor. So we can look at the individual psychological factors, but we have to look at the greater psychological element there. The fucking elephant in the room that nobody seems to want to talk about is, why are there no atheist suicide bombers? Why are there no, you know, agnostic suicide bombers? What's happening here? Why does it seem to really be primarily, you know, the Mohammedans? Why them? Well, I do think it's actually that the understanding of the psychological factors are important. I think that is kind of one of the ways that we can understand the psychology of the suicide bomber. Because obviously it's not as though religion is the main culprit. It is the undeniable part of the equation, but at the same time, you need to have the right melange, right? It's like you try to make an explosive, you need the right ingredients. I think it's the same with any person who wants to become a living explosive, a living weapon. The right combination of things have to be there, but at the end of the day, the fuse for me is fucking religion. And to deny that, I think is really careless, and it's going to cost us if we really deny that, if we fucking ignore that gigantic problem.
Well, that's the whole problem with religion in general, is that the key problem with it is that it allows for incorrect information to be used as actual...
As fact.
As fact, to be considered and weighed when trying to figure out things. It's like, you want to know how to get cut down on the number of suicide bombers... Religious extremism is a pretty good place to start.
I would say that's your first. That is the first target.
You want to get that top 90%, that low hanging fruit. There you go.
Religious fundamentalists. That's usually where they are. Now, before we go, there is one thing I did kind of want to talk about. because I posted this on the site. I want everybody who listens to go there and to make sure that they sign a petition. It's basically what's happened is that there's a gentleman by the name of Hussein Muradi, who is an Afghan-born guy living in Britain, and they're threatening to deport him. And it's very bad considering the fact that he's an apostate. He has publicly said that he is an atheist, that he does not believe in Islam. He's part of a group that basically, you know, promotes these ideas. And the crime for apostasy in Afghanistan is still stoning, okay? And people do get stoned or jailed for blasphemy. This is not a very safe country.
I pretty much guarantee you there's no way he wouldn't go to jail.
Yeah, at the very fucking least.
But he will definitely be in an Afghan jail, and that would be crap.
And this is what boggles my mind, because the guy does not have a criminal record, and he seems as though he's a productive member of society. He's trying to help other Muslims basically apostate like him, and this is the guy that they choose to deport. Okay, this is the same country. In Britain, there's an estimated, according to their intelligence agency, there are over 3,000 British citizens that may be involved in Al-Qaeda in some way. 3,000 of their citizens. They want to take this guy, and they want to send him back. Why don't you send one of those motherfuckers back? Britain still has a huge problem with a bunch of very radical imams and clerics that are calling for all kinds of violent, jihads and shit like that against their own countrymen. They don't deport these douches, yet they want to deport, you know, the very few reasonable ones.
I bet you the problem is that those crazy ones have their paperwork in order, and this atheist does not.
Probably.
And then, you know what? I can respect that to a certain degree. Obviously, this guy should not be sent back. He should be asking for sanctuary. Absolutely.
Well, that's the whole thing. There's a petition online. If you go to the site, I do provide a link. And if you're in the UK and you're listening to this, get involved, you know, sort of phone your member of parliament or something.
No, you just spread the story.
The fucking news,
just
basically.
Let people know, because that's the general thing. Personally, to me, I don't want to be a negative Nelly or anything. Petitions.
They do work. Britain. Britain.
It is true. But to a certain degree, I want to be just realistic about petitions. Is that a lot of petitions, you just sign your name to feel good about it, and then you don't do anything else. And I think this is one of those things that maybe requires attention if you do live in England and you can not throw your weight around with the government. But you know, I can't tell fucking Britain
if
what
you
it
live
can
in Dover
do.
In particular. I don't know if we have any listeners that are in Dover, but that's where he is. So give him some fucking support. I don't care how you do it. Just goddamn do it. Because if we want to think that we're some kind of growing movement and community, we got to act like it. Okay? You don't throw another atheist to the fucking dogs. Do not throw them to the religious dogs. Okay?
Yep. We know what's going to happen if he goes back to Afghanistan.
And do you not want to keep other rational, intelligent people in your country? Like, what the hell is wrong with you? I would say that if you become a free thinker, fuck, come on in, bitch. You already have the right stuff.
Oh, yes. Membership with the Brights comes with privileges, right? I'm not into that whole thing.
Well, I'm not going to declare that every individual that's an atheist is enlightened. I'm just saying that if there is a trend, is that individuals that have a higher degree of education tend to not be religious. And that's a corollary that has existed for a very fucking long time. And it's one of those things that just nobody talks about, but everybody knows. But if you talk about it, people, you know, feel uncomfortable. Are you calling me stupid? Durr. Maybe. Maybe I am. Okay, I think that pretty much sums up the show. So we'd like to thank everybody that contributed either through surveys or through paying. If you're a paying member, we want to thank you even more because...
we understand that it's hard times.
It is hard times, you know? And I remember just reading some of the things that people were writing in saying, well, why aren't you a member? I wasn't asking in a mean way. I really want to know why are you not a member and why would you rather fill surveys rather than pay? And a lot of these people came back saying, well, I just had a kid and I can't afford it. Or, you know, there's a variety of reasons. And $1.67 to me isn't much. But, you know, to people with crazy hardcore budgets, I can understand. And you know, one of our listeners was a 15-year-old kid who has crazy religious parents. So how the hell is he supposed to pay for the show? kind of hard. So we're trying to figure out ways to get around that. We want everybody to contribute at least in some way.
Well, the way we look at it is that we don't care how we squeeze the juice. And if we can get as many people to listen to all of the shows as possible, that'd be great.
Yep. It's a win-win scenario for us. And we hope that it's going to work out. We hope it's a good idea. I keep thinking it's a super idea, but I'm an egomaniac, so I don't know if I'm right. That'll be up to the people who fill out the survey to find out if it's a good idea or not. So we'll love your feedback. All right, with that, we're going to catch everybody for the Friday show. That's the free show, so obviously all of you are going to listen to it. And, yeah, that's it. So with that, my name is Jacob Forte.
I'm Ryan Harkins.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.